Norse god of thunder. A fearless warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He is the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
An agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.
Thor was the quintessential hero. He was strong. Unlike some of the other gods, he was not deceptive. He was not treacherous. But he was steadfast. And as this hero figure, I think people could identify with him best.
In the myth, two of Thor's weapons help him conquer evil forces. A belt that doubles his strength, and a hammer that shoots lethal bolts of lightning. No matter how far Thor throws his trusty hammer, it will return to him like a boomerang. And each time thunder roars, it means Thor's hammer has struck a giant.
Thor is the master of lightning, and this is not uncommon in other mythologies. The obvious parallel here is Zeus in classical mythology, who is the thunder god.
The thunder and lightning god is the protector god. He's the strongest fighter, so he has that capability that Zeus has, the thunderbolt, the hammer for Thor, that can destroy the bad guys.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. And that's right next to our ever-popular weapons of mass destruction, used equipment yard, used and refurbished. We're open all summer, spring, summer, and fall. In the wintertime, we just close up, and unless it's an emergency. If you got a real emergency and you need to make a move on Cleveland or Detroit or Chicago, and or even farther away, if you can get your 18-wheelers in here and you got the hard bullion, we'll fix you up, and we'll even give you a free paint job on the big stuff. We don't handle the little stuff, you know. We don't even handle Jeeps and things like that. We just handle big armored track weaponry here. So anyhow, that's it. In the summertime, we're open. We got we've got a zebra and a giraffe, and once in a while an elephant, and bring the kiddies out and give them a balloon and make a day of it out here. You can picnic out here right behind the weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard in our big forest out here, where there's supposed to be elves and leprechauns. Yeah. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the daily radio show, and that's where you send your donations for other projects. And if you want to send a contribution to one of our POWs, I don't mean just any prisoner, we don't do that, but the known people who sacrifice for the race, you can send us donations and we'll see that they get it. Or you can send it to them directly. When you send us funds to someone at the state level, state prison, you have to go through a special office and send it to them. You can find out on the web where that's at. You can't send money directly to prisoners. And for federal prisoners, you have to go to this office in out there in Iowa. Yeah, and send it to them. And then let your friend know, your associate know, whoever it is, that you sent it. Yeah. We're having a problem getting mail.
Okay, the date is February the 13th, 2014, and this is Thor's Day, a fitting for our opening there. This is Thor's Day. Don't you get more excited over a myth of Odin and Thor than you will over the myth of Jesus? Think about it. If I'm going to have a myth, I want a strong, tough, ass-kicking myth. Oh yeah, we got a full moon out there. How about that? Watch out. The wolves are really on the hunt at the full moon. Well, as you can see, I'm back in the bunker again. Yeah, right. I'm telling you, traveling's not what it's cracked up to be. I don't really like to travel. To be perfectly honest, I'd just about be as happy watching a scene of South America, Europe, or the islands or something like that on a big screen TV as try to go there. I don't know. I think I got my traveling thing out of my system. I mean, long distance traveling. When I was in the Army, I went all over the place. Anyhow, I didn't go all over the place this time, and we had some travel problems. I'll go into it someday. You're not going to believe some of the stuff that happened to me. But it was a combination politics, business, and pleasure. And so anyhow, we're back, and let's get at it. I see that the world is not a safer place than when we left, and so that's too bad. Well, let's get right into the mailbag first. We got a letter here, came back, our box was full, and we got a letter here from Richard Scutari. Greetings, kinsmen. Now, I'm going to these letters, you know, a lot of times they come in written in longhand and sometimes a little bit of sloppy printing, too. So if I screw them up too much, don't blame me. Well, you can blame me for part of it. How is Al Gore's global warming treating you up in tropical Indiana? The effect here is nice. We actually have snow in the ground, and 43 parishes have their schools and state government offices closed. Unfortunately, I can't get out and enjoy the snow. The whole prison has been on emergency lockdown status since the 12th of January. I've spent most of my bit locked in a cell, so I'm kind of used to it. There is no telling how long this will last. The problem is that this is a Mexican prison. Over half of the 1,650 prisoners here are Mexicans. They went off on each other in the recreation yard the other day. Unfortunately, I wasn't out there, so I didn't get a chance to watch them beat each other. But I did watch from my cell window as the guards toted numerous of them off of the yard on stretchers. And the news on the radio stated that six of them had to be taken to the outside hospital. There is not room in the hole for all of them, so we all remain locked in our cells until the administration figures out what to do with them. Meanwhile, it is bag sandwiches three times a day, other than Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, when we get one cold cooked meal. In the last 17 days, I've been allowed out of my cell for 4 or 5 minutes, showers, and can't get that last one there. I'm glad they waited for a week to go off. The weekend before it happened found me out in the visiting room enjoying 3 days of mental something, probably. Anyhow, with his wife. The only thing that ruined the visit was when they would not let me go home with her. I know John and Christina are busy, but last month I sent them legal papers for Randy Dewey. Could you check and let me know if they got the papers? With that, I'm gone. Thanks for the internet material and the interesting postcards. Take care, Kinsman. I wish you all the best. 14 words, Richard Scutari. I guess the only thing they'll be able to do with these Mexicans is just make them automatically citizens and get them out of the prison. That sounds like one of their more intelligent, stupid things they will do. In that sense, the mestizos are much like the Negroes. If they don't have anybody else to kill, they kill each other. This one's going to be a little harder to read. It's in pencil and it's printed. And it's from Craig Cobb. Now, he says in here that he was supposed to go to a pre-trial conference on the 10th. So we're beyond the 10th, and I haven't heard what's happened since then. Dear Tom, it was real good to read your latest letter to the editor, the one in which you clarify to the people of North Dakota that my crime in Canada is protected by the First Amendment in our country. I tell you, Tom, these new generations have no respect or honor for the freedom of speech or religion, both, of course, subsumed under the First Amendment. Tom, here is the address of a very well-written paper, even though it is free. It is far better written than the Bismarck Tribune. It's called the Great Plains Examiner, P.O. Box 241, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58502. The managing editor is Mr. Days Wetzel, W-E-T-Z-E-L, and I have met and have been interviewed by him. He has given me very fair coverage. Dale Wetzel's phone number is 701-400-8557. I'm sure he would be interested in talking to you. And I forgot to mention that the revised charges I got at the January 15th preliminary, it seems Assistant State's Attorney Todd A. Swartz has now added phrases such as, while holding a loaded, long-barreled weapon, unquote. But the testimony by the deputy, John Foss, was just the opposite, that the weapons were not loaded, chambered technically by the North Dakota law. T.T. knew Keenan Dutton has been given 9 days and has been a little on pins and needles trying to understand how and why. I'll teach you, for pleading out. You know, from facing 35 years to 7 misdemeanors is pretty radical change. And at first I was so hopeful that my freedom was next. But now I guess I see it's more really as you do, more cynically like you do. But it's weird they can put such a disparity off on the general public. Anyway, the pretrial is February 10th, a week from tomorrow, Monday the 3rd. They really seem to have mob rule going against me here. Tom, here is one address you could write for the possible help. In some states, the Highway Patrol oversees county sheriffs. Well, I'm afraid, Craig, you're wrong there, that the sheriff is the ultimate power in the county. It's pretty hard even for state cops to override a sheriff. Here in North Dakota, the cops who investigate cops are called the Bureau of Criminal Investigations, State Capitol Department 125, 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505-0340. The tack to take would be to request investigation of the Grant County Sheriff Steve Bay and Assistant State's Attorney Todd A. Schwartz as to why none of the harassments, thefts, intimidations, and death threats and so on against myself, Keenan Dutton, and Deborah Henderson were never investigated, and not a single charge was brought despite many evidences. For example, I provided high-definition video proof of an assault on me by Daniel DeVitt at an October 27th Lee City Hall meeting. A second man also lurched and made contact, but I don't know his name. He is shown attacking me on the video, though. No charges were ever made by the D.A. Schwartz. A. Michael Zimmerman of the Grand Forks openly bragged online about defacing my wiki page with "Kill this racist, kill this Nazi" in red type on my wiki page. I got the IP from the wiki and gave it to Bay. Nothing happened. Another guy who claimed to be Nathaniel Pittman of the Bismarck was really Todd Johnson of Bismarck. I dropped his number on the Spokio, a paid reverse lookup service. She liked to call me at 5 a.m. and called the day of my arrest at 5:01. He claimed to be in Unity, and which is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the ARA. Itself, as you know, a longtime operative of the ADL. I don't know how much contact the ARA has with the ADL. I think the ADL would be a little bit careful about contacts with the ARA. But anyhow, I don't know. Anyway, again, Bay and Schwartz did nothing. Time after time, these are just a few examples. The Indian woman, Phyllis Young, of Standing Rock Indian Reservation, stole a flag and put her picture up with it on the line saying she stole and burned it. Bay and Schwartz did nothing to capture and prosecute her. TT, anyway, more later. Really appreciate your letters and support. Craig Cobb. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happened at this latest hearing, and I hope he doesn't fall for the same thing that Dutton did and plead guilty on all these crimes, so-called crimes, and get it dropped to misdemeanor, because they're going to put a lot of ties onto this thing, and it's going to affect his ability to move and have a passport and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely worth fighting, and I'm trying to get that across to him. If he doesn't stand tall, and they're not going to give him 35 years, that's nonsense. They always say that, you know, they could do all of that. But anyhow, that's the latest from Craig Cobb. Got some other mail from regular prisoners, but I won't take time to read it. It's they're pretty much the same. Well, now I want to get into a report from the person we called DC Scout. Sent me some information. I'm going to play it back for you, and I think this is some information you need.
This is DC Scout reporting to you from the cloaca of the Empire, Washington, D.C., on January 14th, 2014, with various bits of information that you might find useful, because things are getting very bad here, and we need to start thinking outside the box, as if we're not already, but we need to think further out, we need more information, and we need to be more imaginative. Today I'll be talking about security and general conditions as I perceive them. First off, that terrible cold front that moved across the country about 7 days ago. I don't think that was natural. And what I mean by that is I think it was engineered. Now, how it was engineered, I don't know. We can all refer to the so-called HAARP machine, which I understand has since been discontinued, but you never know. But I am certain that the U.S. government and the people that it works for possesses technology we don't know about. The U.S. government possesses directed energy technologies, and who knows what it can do. So there's lots of chatter, and there has been for quite a few years now, about a kill-off by the powers that be who think that there's too many people. And the powers that be are right. There are too many people. And I suppose that there's debate within the top about how to get rid of us. Well, you can do it slowly by vaccines and poison food. You can do it slowly by a slowly increasingly toxic environment. Or you can try something new, like drop the temperature from 50 degrees to 5 degrees in 24 hours and bring 20-mile-an-hour winds behind it. Now, I felt here in the Washington, D.C. area, I felt the power grid descending to a breakdown. Because I know, I've been living around here all my life, and I know when something is extraordinary, when conditions are extraordinary, and that cold invasion a week ago was extraordinary. And I also know the stupidity of the population around here who would not make personal adjustments by putting on a wool sweater or two and blankets and possibly pulling wool blankets off the door, over the doors, and insulating their house somehow. I know what they did. They kept cranking up the heat. I think we're on the edge of a brownout, and I think if that cold invasion comes again, there's going to be a blackout. And that blackout can be made to last for several days or weeks. And if it lasts for weeks, it's going to kill hundreds of thousands of people. And maybe that's what the intention is. I sense here in the D.C. area powerful technologies. They're not visible, but I sense them. And sometimes I hear them, especially at night. I hear low rumblings. I hear what sometimes sounds like artillery, but I hear these boomings, and I hear these thuds and these rolling, growling sounds that run through the ground, or they come through the air. I don't know where they're coming from. Sometimes they're ambient, Sometimes they seem to be coming from the southwest. Now, I've said before that it could be coming from Quantico, which is about 18, 20 air miles south of D.C. The air arm down there at Quantico, there used to be an air unit down there, and they used to have a bombing range down there at Quantico. I don't know if they still have it. I wouldn't be surprised if it's gone because the area is too built up now. But if it's not the Navy or the Marine Corps fucking around down there with explosives somehow, I don't know what it is. But all I know is I feel the presence of technologies operating, hovering, and it's not just the drones. It's like an electric, energetic charge in the air that's building up. It's like sparkling and crackling. I have no way to prove this. I have no evidence so far, but I'm looking around. And the other big notable thing around here is that every 2 weeks, if I go to a different part of the city, I see fewer whites. Whites are disappearing around here. And in the suburbs, too, there's fewer and fewer whites. Or maybe the converse, maybe the ratio of coloreds to whites is increasing. But there's fewer white faces in the crowd. And that could be because of that ratio, that increasing ratio, or whites are simply leaving, or whites are staying inside. They come out to work, they come out to shop for food and do what they got to do. But as far as socializing and being exposed to the public more than they need to, they might be avoiding the public. That's understandable because life around here in D.C., if you're not one of those whites that's on the SS Kumbaya and loving it, if you're one of those whites that refuses to get on the SS Kumbaya, then living around here in the D.C. area is quite unpleasant. And the colored belt is spreading out rapidly. You can go out 40, 50 miles in any direction from the center of D.C., and it's pretty much majority colored. You got to go way out to find a majority white area. The natural consequence of domination by people of color is a degraded environment, and I mean that at the lowest level. I mean trash. These people are utterly disgusting. These people are a menace to survival. Everywhere you go in the D.C. area that's dominated by coloreds now, you see trash along the roads, mostly fast food trash, McDonald's, Burger King bags. They finish, they go through the drive-thru, they eat while they're driving, they stuff all the components back in the bag, and they throw the goddamn bag out beside the road. It turns my stomach. And it's just one more confirmation in my mind that coloreds are lethal to the white man in several ways. Culturally, a drain of taxes, and the assault on the environment. These people shit where they sleep. That's what they did back home, and that's why they're here. They trash their environment, and they come running to the white man to survive. And our white traitors and the Jews that run the government, and their white lackeys, they let them in. The racial tension here in the D.C. area is very bad. It's quite obvious that the Jew media is getting the Negroes stoked up about the white man. And that's evident in the publication of these stories of polar bear hunting, or what do they call it, the knockdown game that the niggers have been pulling off on the white man, on white people. That's put out there for a reason. And furthermore, like TT said a couple of years ago, I think that Obama is being set up. He's a tool to agitate white people. He's this guy is going so far out of bounds that it can't be a mistake. He's being used as a tool to push through these policies that only a person of color could do with the support of a huge population base behind him. Media power, propaganda power alone could not get away with forcing the occupant at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue into making these moves without a huge popular base to support him. So Obama is very, very close to getting to that zone where some foolish white guy is going to pick up a rifle, I fear, and then try to take a shot at him. And, of course, some special kike unit will be behind it, some guy that's on meds, some guy that's seeing a psychologist, a Jew psychologist, and the Jew psychologist is going to develop this guy and egg him along, and he'll be fed enough information about Obama's route, and this guy's going to take a shot at him, and all hell's going to break loose after that. So if it's not an assassination attempt on the president, I think it's going to be some false flag event close to D.C., which will serve as an excuse for the security state to establish what they've been wanting to establish for several years now, which is what I'm going to call a special security zone around D.C. This zone may be a mile deep, like a donut shape around D.C., and this special security zone will be absolutely sterilized. It will be swept of all weapons by any means, and the thugs will be run out. I'm talking about the nigger thugs and the Mexican thugs, the Aztec thugs, been running around here, and some of the lower orders of Asians, like the Cambodians, the criminal gangs. They're going to be run out for a time until they can be vetted and then brought back in as a group of psychopaths to be loosed to unleash more terror on the remaining white population. So that's something you should be looking out for. A false flag event by quote-unquote non-state actors conducted close to D.C. so that a special security zone can be established around Washington. Any of you whites that are still here and you got any weapons here in D.C., bury them or get them the hell out of here, because they're coming. There's no question about it. Now, this new security posture that's coming to the D.C. area, and if it comes to D.C., it's probably also going to come to New York City, L.A., Miami, and other Chicago and other centers of with high Jew populations, media centers, propaganda centers. I don't think that the so-called civilian law enforcement agencies are going to have enough muscle to pull this off. I think that paramilitary forces and contractors are going to be brought in to assist in this. Now, if you live on a waterway, the Navy might be involved too, but this is mostly going to be an Army thing. Now, the Army has several units, and the Army has participated in civil operations before in a clandestine manner. And I know that Army units participated in anti-Klan activities in the South in the 50s and the 60s. I recall reading Colonel David Hackworth's autobiography. He was a real gung-ho type, just loved the Army. The Army was the entire world. And in the early 60s, he and other Army officers were sent on reconnaissance missions throughout the South. I forget where. I think maybe Mississippi. I forget what state it was, maybe Alabama, but he was in the Deep South in civilian cars wearing civilian clothes. They were doing recons and taking notes and mapping out routes and whatever the Army does in case a military force had to be brought in. The Army's going to do it again, I assure you. Now, let me tell you about the units that will be involved. Stand by. What might first come to your mind is DHS, but DHS is really a puffball. It is so poorly disorganized that it's not to be taken seriously from all the information that I've gathered about it. And then you've got the FBI, of course, and then you've got the CIA. They've got a special unit. I forget what they're called. I think they're mostly overseas. And then you've got the the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms and explosives. They'll be involved too. But they're mostly, they go after guns. They go after the guys that are making bombs. What I have in mind are the clandestine operators, the plainclothes guys who run agents and send out assassination teams. The FBI did this in the South a few times. I think the Army is going to predominate this time. And there's two groups of the Army that are involved in this. You've got the Army intelligence people based out of Fort Meade, where NSA is. They've got under, at Fort Meade, they've got this asymmetric warfare group, and these guys, these are black pajama guys. They consist of both military, active duty military people, and civilian contractors. And these guys study an area, study problems, and according to my information, they look for non-state solutions, and they look for countermeasures. And they look to influence culture, whatever that means, to influence culture to develop an appropriate countermeasure. Okay, that's the asymmetric warfare group. You can Google that and fill in the details yourself. Then the other group we've got comes out of the JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, down at Fort Bragg. They've got the ISA, which is the Intelligence Support Activity. And they've got the Military Information Support Group, or the Psychological Warfare Group. Now, the ISA, they gather intelligence. They gather signals intelligence, they run agents, and they conduct direct action operations. Signal intelligence, I think that's done mostly from the air. Now, they run these little two-prop airplanes. If you see a little two-prop airplane buzzing around, civilian markings, that's either CIA or that's Army. That's loaded with eavesdropping equipment, and so that's one activity. Then you've got the plainclothes guys that run recon, like I just mentioned that the Army did in the South. They run agents, informers. They conduct recon. What they do is prepare the battle space. They find out who the troublemakers are, right? And then you've got the HIT team. They've got the DA, the direct action teams. These guys are going to come in, and if the kikes are really nervous and they've identified troublemakers, well, that might be one thing they do. They might haul you in for questioning, and they might kill you after they interrogate you, or they just might shoot you while you're having dinner or mowing your lawn. And then we've got the Military Information Support Group, or Psychological Warfare. These guys take control of media. That means radio, TV. You can bet your ass they're working at Google, too. And they drop leaflets, whatever they got to do. And their job is to disorient or demoralize the enemy force. Now, they've got a lot of training. They've had a lot of training in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're studying the United States, too, because You know what, people? We got to look at take a look at the Army. Now, there's a lot of good people, and there's a lot of good white men and women in there that believe in the Constitution, and they're defending the homeland and all that. But there's a lot of psychos in there, and there's a lot of organization people in there. They live, like my drill sergeants used to say in boot camp, I eat, breathe, sleep, and fuck Army. The Army is the world. The Army is the message. And if the Army tells them to go out and look for white troublemakers, white men and women, especially in rural areas, who object to being taxed into poverty, being stripped of their property, being herded into cities to disappear in a sea of colored people who resent being enslaved by the Jew World Order, well, these Army guys are going to come out and neutralize you. What do you think about that? So these Army guys that are coming after us are going to get a big surprise, because not only are we going to fight back, the other good news is that the rural areas are just full of hardcore infantry and special operations types, former ones and retired ones, and hunters. These guys are out there because they love the bush and they love running around in the bush with a gun. And they're going to take umbrage at being told they can't do that anymore. So the government is going to lose. But in the meantime, we're educating ourselves, and we're making sure of where we stand and why we're going to do what we're going to do. We need to understand the enemy. And I hope that the information I'm giving to you moves you along in this direction. Now, if you live on navigable waterways, especially around a Navy base, there might be some Navy spook types. There's going to be naval patrols and Coast Guard patrols, and they've got their riverine forces and they've got their patrol craft. But I don't think that's something you got to worry about. What you got to worry about are the political operatives. I don't think the Navy's going to be involved in political activity very much, unless they think that white resistors are planning on coming in and raiding armories and sabotaging naval ships and that sort of thing. I don't think the Navy shouldn't be your focus. It's the Army you got to look at. This is a recent interview with Professor Chasudovsky of Canada. He's one of the few Jews who tell the truth, but he's talking about the death squads run by the CIA and the Israelis that are called Al-Qaeda. These are psychopathic mercenaries that are brought in to destroy populations that sit on resources that the Jews want and the corporations want, or populations that are enemies of the New World Order.
Their souls.
Breaking their souls, that's the good word. And mind you, this notion of going in and killing children and people in essence is also connected to the terrorist attacks in Syria. Okay?
Right.
It may be different actors, although Israel is also supporting the terrorists. I think that's very important. The Zionist state is supporting the Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorists. You might say, well, why would they do that? Because they're dead against Muslims. No, they don't like Muslims. But no, they're joining hands with the jihadists. They're joining hands with the Saudi-trained mercenaries. Okay?
Exactly. Yeah.
And in fact, that there's a relationship between Saudi Arabia and Israel, but we've followed and documented the massacres which took place in the city of Adra. That was barely a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't even reported in the Western media. Okay? The Western media they reported on what was happening in Aleppo. But there you have a whole town which is attacked by death squads coming in and killing everybody, beheading people. Now, the other thing which we can look at these massacres, but there was something quite specific in that in that massacre is that the rebels came in and they had the names of key people in the city who were government officials, businessmen, and
sure.
so on. They killed people randomly, but they had the names and addresses and phone numbers
yeah.
of people who had to be executed.
Now,
you don't do that without having some intelligence people and special forces behind it. It
yeah.
means it's very carefully planned, so that these are planned massacres, and it's not these young killers that bear responsibility for the killings. Well, they do, but they are hired killers. We have to understand that. And when you are a hired killer, when you hire a killer to kill somebody, you are responsible. And those killers are trained in Saudi Arabia, Qatar. They have special forces, Western special forces. There's a whole organizational structure, and there's also a ritual of killing and executing. Nothing is done by accident. And why do they commit these atrocities? It's to intimidate an entire population. It's what I recall General Tommy Franks, who was commander of CENTCOM, leading the invasion into Iraq. He used the term mass casualty producing event. It's a military concept, mass casualty producing event, mass civilian casualty producing event. You have to kill a lot of people to subdue the enemy and subdue the victims of war. And then, of course, you go and blame it on Bashar al-Assad. That's the background. It's entrenched in military doctrine.
The death list, by the way, Michelle, of course, was used in Libya. The same thing. They went in with lists of people, and they simply eradicated all those loyal to the Gaddafi regime.
Absolutely. Now, let me give you another example of how. Because this is a U.S. NATO agenda. Those terrorists were recruited by U.S. NATO.
Correct.
We have documents to that effect.
Absolutely
okay?
right.
They'll get their proxy states to do it, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Jordan, and so on, Israel. So we don't have blood on our hands. It's the Saudis, okay, who are doing it. But they're doing it because we tell them to do it. But when I went to Belgrade, that was quite a number of years back, and I visited one of the hospitals which had been bombed during the 1999 bombing, and I spoke to the director of the hospital, and he said when they bombed, it was a children's hospital. What they did was to bomb the power generation so that electricity went off and all the incubators and all the they evacuated the hospital
mm-hmm.
but they hit precisely that part of the hospital which would then lead to casualties.
Who was the commander in chief of the American military at that
time? Well, it was Wesley Clark at the time, was it not?
But the commander in chief was the president, William Jefferson Clinton.
Yeah, but these were NATO forces, so
allegedly. We know where it was coming from. Very good point, very important point. The sacrifice of mass civilians certainly had to have reached its zenith in World War II.
Precisely.
Those were the
massacres that took place, the German cities which were... You know, people don't like to talk about it because if you talk about it, then you say you're in favor of the Nazis. But it was gratuitous killing. Hiroshima was gratuitous killing. North Korea, 30% of the population wiped out through carpet bombing.
Death. Gone.
Yeah. And it is not. Those were not military targets. They.
No.
When I went to Nuremberg to give a lecture, that was several years back, and And the whole city has been rebuilt because it was bombed during World War II, but the only building that was still standing was the SS headquarters, which was spared. So that in effect they avoided hitting military targets and they targeted civilians.
Yep.
And we have the same kind of ideology of mass casualty, of killing civilians, millions of civilians, with a view to defeating a nation, destroying its people, destabilizing government. And now we have the real danger that the various theater wars in the Middle East will coalesce. We have several areas of conflict or theater wars: Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Palestine, Libya.
When we see
now,
the same bloody fingers in each one, we
and
have
Lebanon.
Yeah. Yeah, and Lebanon.
And now what is happening is, in a sense, this whole reach is flaring up.
Okay, I played that for you so to give you a feel of what we're dealing with. The United States government and the Jews who control it and the corporations are going to do the same thing here. When they try to throw us off our land, when they come after us for resisting miscegenation and further integration and overtaxation and enslavement, they're going to send in the Army, and they're going to send in the Air Force, and they're going to send in the Special Forces, and all these killers and informers and saboteurs, and they're going to try to neutralize us. But they're going to fail. Getting down to the normal situation, the state of the police forces in the United States is deteriorating very fast also. It's different in the rural areas where you have a close relationship between the county sheriff or the town sheriff and the people. But in these municipal police organizations, they are heavily influenced by Israel and Israeli methods and Washington, Jewish influence, Jewish terror. And that's something that we got to learn to deal with. Now, I'm going to play you a clip of a gun trainer in Texas who was affiliated for a short time with a police department, which he won't name, but he's telling you what he encountered with this police department and some of the dirty tricks that these cops use.
Do things that are completely unnecessary. They didn't have to beat that guy to death in Fullerton. This is nuts.
Yeah. That was disgusting. I mean, I sat there and I read the article when it first happened. You know, it's just one of those things that just, it's the moment where liberty dies. And I can't stand for that. I myself went through I'm not going to disclose what department, but a sheriff's academy in South Florida. And I quickly realized they were teaching me things that were not conducive to protecting the public. Mm-hmm. I learned more about how to hurt people by police than I have by gang members. So that took the wind out of my sails wanting to be a law enforcement
officer. Very interesting. Can you give me a couple of examples? Just elaborate on that a little bit. They taught the police cadets how to hurt anybody, criminal, non-criminal, to protect themselves, I assume.
Some of it was to protect themselves. Some of it was just malicious behavior.
Really?
You would have, for instance,
in the academy.
Many of them carry backup pieces in larger metropolitan areas, and most of them aren't registered to that individual police officer.
That's a throwaway, right? Throwdown?
Yeah, basically. And what they'll do is they'll take hollow points, cut the tip off of steel nails, and then super glue them into the hollow points, making armor-piercing rounds. Or they'll take lead to hollow points and ground garlic in it. Well, most people out there aren't chemists, but when you take lead and garlic and superheat it at a high temperature, you create an arsenic-type chemical. So you could shoot someone in the foot. They'll get away, but they're definitely not going to make it through the night.
Wow. And you learned this in the academy.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Well, the throwdown. Yeah. The throwdown gun tell our listeners what the throwaway or throwdown gun is.
Well, a throwaway piece is really just, you know, a privately purchased piece. You know, the ones that you hear about Americans buying all the time that they can't control? Well, the police are buying them too. And ultimately, some police, not all and not even most, but some police carry these things with the sole purpose of being able to get into a firefight that they started, they caused, they controlled, they won on a helpless victim, and then frame the individual with carrying a firearm.
By putting the gun on them.
Right, exactly. He had a gun. That's all you need to know. And, you know, when you're a cop, the level of forensics that's going to be involved in that is far less than what it would be for you or I.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay.
And Jeff, really what we're looking at is we're dealing with the largest gang in America, and it's subsidized by local, state, and federal government.
Yeah.
And I refuse to believe that the majority of these individuals are bad. I know in my heart that they join for the right reasons, and I think just through the time and the hardships that they have to face. Because keep in mind, you know, these people go to a horror movie every hour.
Every day. Exactly. A fatal automobile accident, beating, doesn't matter, a rape. These are horrors of the human condition that no one should have to do. And after a while, what happens to them? Psychologically, they start to break down. Unfortunately, many of them who go into law enforcement are already psychologically destroyed from being in the military. So you've got a double whammy. Not a good picture. Not a good picture.
Well, you also got to, like, remember when we did the, the stopgap for Iraq and Afghanistan, and we started recruiting all these groups?
Mm-hmm.
They took the highest amount in history of gang-related citizens. And at that point, I think in 2009, we had, between the Army and the Marines, we had 32% of all NCO personnel who were gang-affiliated. Now, these people went to war, were trained to be an efficient killing machine, and then they're brought home, kicked out of the Army, into this economy. So guess what kind of job they're going to take up?
Right, yeah.
They're going to be a police officer, or they're going back to crime.
Yeah, not many of them make it into the police officer ranks. Most of them end up on the streets doing other stuff. Hold on a second. We have to pause. Matt Williams and I will be right back.
So if the cops aren't enough to keep white resistance in line, well, then the Army's going to come in behind it, and the Army's going to have its lists, and the Army's going to have its killers. So there's another front. That's another dimension of warfare we have to deal with. Here's a little bit of info on DHS. Back in December, there was three top guys that replaced the old guard. The new head of DHS is this mulatto named Jeh Johnson, J-E-H Johnson. He's probably homosexual. The assistant head of DHS is a Cuban-born fellow named Alejandro Mayorkas. He could pass for white, but apparently he's chosen to be play with the race card. And then the Inspector General of DHS is a kike, John Roth, and he's almost a shoo-in if he hasn't already been plugged in by the Senate, which is entirely millionaires and owned by Israel. And also back in December, the DHS chose an Israeli company to supply its unified communication systems. Surprise, surprise. The Israeli company is called Elbit Systems, E-L-B-I-T. It's owned by Ronan Horowitz. And Elbit is tasked to supply DHS with a universal connectivity technology incorporating intelligence awareness. Now, what this means is that in any emergency or any situation, anybody on this system can be able to hook into any cell phone network, any video cam or any video conference with other government agencies, any land mobile radio. In other words, this guy can connect to any camera with any organization, with any cell phone, any radio net. And believe it or not, Elbit system is already on NASDAQ, big surprise. And supposedly this new system is for first responders. In other words, DHS is buying off local law enforcement, emergency management services, but that's just a way, of course, of casting its net down to the micro level. It's the same thing, same strategy where it takes these retired Army personnel carriers and Humvees and gives them, shines them up and repaints them and gives them to local PDs, which gets the gun groupies and the macho jerks on these police departments all excited. So DHS is buying its way into prominence, not by performance at this point, but by handing out candy. I don't need to emphasize the issue. The general issue is that we are facing an extremely dangerous situation, and it is hellishly complex. When the United States blows, it's going to be the most terrifying event in human history. It's going to make the Russian Revolution and the Chinese Revolution look like a soccer riot. I strongly suggest to all white people who want to survive to get the hell off the coast, get at least 100 miles inland, and preferably put the mountain barriers between you and the coasts, because it's going to be unbelievably frightening. You all understand that a main trick of the system to deflect rebellion is to divert people's attention. Now, it's quite obvious that pornography and the media stars and what they're up to is a big component of that. And also the occult is another big component of that, UFOs and Bigfoot and aliens and all that sort of thing. Who knows whether some of that is real or not? I'm not sure. And I also mentioned earlier about the weather, and I also mentioned that the government surely possesses technology we don't know. They possess aerial aircraft, directed energy weapons, and the government also possesses the ability to project images. Now, the government might someday, when it gets really desperate, it might fake an alien invasion. And get people all shook up and cringing and surrendering more power to the government, surrendering more power, giving up more liberties. I'm going to play you a clip from a fellow named Richard Sauder, who is an exile, self-exile. He lives in South America now. And he writes on various topics of technology and government diversion programs. Stand by.
Destroyed or damaged thousands of houses and injured evidently hundreds of people, I think. It was a major event. There probably will be more. I don't know. You know, these people who talk about either our solar system being approached by a major unknown celestial body or some swarm of comets that may enter the inner solar system in the coming months or years. I don't rule that out. It's a big galaxy. And undoubtedly there are all kinds of planetary bodies and planetoids that are roaming around. So could something like that perturb the stability of the solar system or send a bunch of comets screaming in? I don't see why not. And
It's even worse than that, because we don't even really know what the right model is for the solar system or the galaxy. I mean,
I agree.
You know, there is esoteric thought that the sun is actually part of a binary system, and so occasionally the other one is going to come closer, and that's going to mess things up dramatically. And then there's the whole theory that actually the sun is really a comet, basically, and we're always in what's called the coma, the back end of the comet. And so we never really experience the other side. We're just being pulled along, you know, with the ride. Now, I'm not saying that's true, but I'm just pointing out, you know, we don't even really know enough to be sure about whether junk is ahead of us, you know?
Yeah, well, personally, and if it is, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, for sure. We can't do anything. So,
if there are big rocks that are going to come screaming in at 40,000 miles per hour or maybe even faster, I can't stop that. And however, I will say that one of my interviews relating this to some of my underground bases research, one of my sources some years back told me, when I asked him, why are so many underground bases being built? He gave me a list of reasons. And one of them is that at the highest levels of the military-industrial complex, or maybe I should say at the lowest levels, given the theme of much of my research, they are well aware of the possibility of civilization-ending cataclysm. They are well aware that there have been multiple global cataclysms in the past on the Earth, and they are well aware that this could happen again in the future. In fact, this is very likely to happen in the future. So that's one of the motivations. Global cataclysm from, you know, from meteors or from change of the a change in the physics of the Earth's rotation, that type of thing. They're aware that the continents have not always been where they are now. They're aware that the polar climates, South Pole and North Pole, have not always been as they are now. These are people who've read the geological record very, very carefully and have drawn the appropriate lessons from that record, which is that things have not always been like they are now, and that the changes can be very abrupt, very, very abrupt and global in scope, and can take place in a matter of days, not thousands or millions of years, but days.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. I have a little aside for you. I got a chance to work with a guy who had been, oh, let's say, number one in his class in the military academy for his country in Eastern Europe during the days of the Cold War. So he was on the fast track to being a general and all that when the communist system came tumbling down, and so he left and moved west. He told me, and he lived his life, he was of the view that he'd been told by, the number three military guy in his country in Eastern Europe, that they were very sure that some celestial event was coming that was going to be very, very disastrous for at least a large part of the Earth. And this guy that I dealt with lived his life in that way. I mean, he moved to a place where, you know, massive tsunamis, and I don't mean 30 meter, I mean 300 meter tsunamis and stuff would be survivable. And he was serious as a heart attack, and this is the kind of guy who would be number one in his class at any kind of school on Earth you could put him in. Serious as a heart attack. And that's what he said. And I can't prove it. And I knew him back in the mid-90s. And he thought that the events would be coming around 2010, but he had no idea. They didn't let him know. He wasn't, qualified enough to be told this kind of stuff. It's just a data point. I got no proof of it, but it wouldn't surprise me that they would have some evidence of things coming, and it would be neat to know. But anyway, he was arguing back in the mid-90s that a massive building program was going on, and including in Eastern Europe, by the way.
Building around.
Oh, everything. Underground train systems, underground, you know, storage for food, stuff under mountains. And he's saying it was not for a nuclear war. That might happen as part of the confusion, but that was not the actual purpose. It was that some celestial events were coming, or at least a big one.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out whatsoever. And, of course, as I said, my research has revealed that certainly in the American system, that at the highest levels, those who plan and design underground facilities are very well aware that this type of thing can happen, and that the impact can be global, and in a very short period of time. We're talking like, you know, 72 hours.
Action. And then out of Fort Meade, you've got the Asymmetric Warfare Group. And these are black pajama guys too, but I think that they're more analytical types. They do carry guns, and they do go through all this machine gun training. There's pictures of them on the internet. There's pictures of all these guys. Just Google whatever you don't know, and it's there. There's no reason to be a fool anymore. Watch out for these plain clothes. Never trust anybody on a government pension. In a metropolitan area, never trust a retired or active law enforcement, a cop. And above all, never, ever, ever trust a Jew. Take care, resistors. 88.
Well, I had to edit a little bit of that at the end. We can always go back and get it later, but it was just more of the same about these theories about comets and all that kind of stuff, and I mean, anything can happen any time, but let's try to keep our minds on something that we might have a possibility of confronting. That's it for today, and thank DC Scout, DC Scout. And I've got about three more of his shows, so every other day or so we'll be putting another one in, and we'll go from there. 14-5. One more thing. I had to happen chance to be in the Denver airport during my travels. Very interesting. Even the artwork is crazy. Absolutely insane. I talked to a man and just off the top of his head, he said, you know, when they built this, the only people allowed in here were the contractors. Nobody else was allowed in. Interesting. 14-5.
Five.